Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And with a little more than a month to go until the presidential election, we'll begin today with politics and our week in review. Starting with Donald Trump's town hall meeting last night in Sandown, New Hampshire, a state where he's locked in a tight race with Hillary Clinton. It came just 3 days before the next presidential debate, a big opportunity for Trump to right his campaign after a shaky first debate. But the Republican nominee said at last night's event, which was by invitation only, it was not a tune-up for Sunday.
This has nothing to do with Sunday. We're just here because we just wanted to be here. And, you know, Hillary, frankly, they talk about debate prep. That's not debate prep. She's resting. She's resting. And I want to be with the American people. I want to be with the people from New Hampshire. And she wants to rest.
With a big week in politics behind us, including the first and only VP candidate debate, and a big month ahead of us, let's turn to our week in review panelists. Tiziana Deering, professor of social work at Boston College. She's also a member of WBUR's Community Advisory Board. Tiziana, good to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Also with us is Charlie Chipio. He's a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and a research fellow at the Ash Center of Harvard's Kennedy School. Charlie, good to have you as well.
Thank you.
Well, let's start right there at the town hall in Sandown, New Hampshire last night. So Trump says it wasn't a dry run, but like last night's event, Sunday's debate will be a town hall format and the candidates will take questions directly from voters. What do you two, I'll start with you, Tiziana, what are you expecting Sunday night?
God only knows.
That's sort of the safest thing to say in this election season, I think.
Seriously, anybody who thinks they know what's coming next after the pattern recognition of the last several months is a fool, right? What might we be expecting on Sunday night? It may be that this kind of brand of getting to interact with the public, quote unquote, actually will be better for Trump, who's at least used to rubbing elbows, and Hillary Clinton's kind of known for not being great in the town hall format. But if she can make him mad again, and he goes off the handle like he does every single time he gets mad or offended, God only knows what's going to happen. I find it totally implausible, though, that this wasn't a dry run, although you might have called it a softball game instead of a town hall meeting because of the way they were throwing him softballs. But if it's a town hall meeting and you know you're going to do a town hall meeting on Sunday night, how is it not a dry run?
Yeah, it's a good question. What do you think, Charlie?
Well, it's funny. I watch him and I think, boy, it's amazing he's only had three wives because you know, because it's so incredible that, you know, how easily he gets annoyed by almost anything, you know, and he just goes off. So I'm sure that there's something that she'll say that will set him off, and that he won't be able to control himself. I would think what he would try to do is probably go. There was a couple things he sort of missed on that you would think he would have hit on last time. You know, the whole deplorables thing about who, you know, half his what was the baskets of deplorables,
right? Basket of deplorables.
Yeah. You know, I would think that he'll get more on that. He'll probably go more into the emails. Her health. He'll probably make it a point to try to at least focus himself enough to go after the areas where he probably perceives that she is vulnerable.
Well, in New Hampshire last night, a voter asked Trump sort of about this question, Charlie. If Trump held back in the first debate with Hillary Clinton. Here's what he said.
I did hold back. I thought it was just inappropriate to say what I was really thinking I would say. And I held back, I think for good reason. I think for good reason. I'd much rather have it be on policy. And I didn't like getting into the gutter.
All right, well, so here's my bold prediction. I sort of come down on Charlie's side. I think Trump will be focusing less on policy and more on attacking Clinton, emails, Benghazi, maybe even Bill Clinton's infidelity. I think Clinton is going to focus on Trump's penchant for saying crazy stuff. What do you think, Tiziana?
Well, so a couple of things. Sorry, 10 thoughts crashing into my head at once on this. You know, I think he will try to go after her weaknesses. And I think Mike Pence in the vice presidential debate painted a pretty good roadmap for him about how you do that fairly effectively. I don't think he'll stay on it, and I also think he's got risks. You know, this jerky comment about she's staying home and resting. Yeah. As a woman, let me tell you which hand signals that makes me want to send him, right? And so he's got to be really careful, since the polls show that that's really where he's behind with women. Some of these strategies, your husband wasn't faithful to you and it's your fault, you're too weak and poor feminine you to be president, these are not necessarily winning strategies for the population he's got to get to vote for him to get him over the top at the end.
But that's been the case forever, and it doesn't seem to affect him. It affects him perhaps in the polls, but he doesn't seem to care.
He just keeps saying all this
crazy stuff. I mean, my favorite was when he accused Hillary of not being loyal to her husband, which was sort of an interesting twist, I thought. But and it's this whole childish thing about it. I mean, let's be real. She's 69 years old. He's 70 years old. You know, I'm a little younger than that. I need to rest all the time. what are we talking about here?
Yeah, this idea of somehow needing to rest as being a disqualifying factor, it really puzzles me. I've chased presidential candidates around as a very young man. I mean, I did this a long time ago, and man, it's exhausting.
It seems like
for people who are strong, young, let alone in their early 70s. So that is a puzzling one. Well, we mentioned the vice presidential debate this week between Governor Mike Pence and Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. So let's listen to a little bit of that and talk a little bit about this debate. So here's Kaine, the Democrat, sounding like he was running for interrupter-in-chief and directed many of his attacks directly at Donald Trump. Here he is.
Donald Trump during his campaign has called Mexicans rapists and criminals. He's called women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting. I don't like saying that in front of my wife and my mother. He attacked an Indiana-born federal judge and said he was unqualified to hear a federal lawsuit because his parents were Mexican.
So a whole lot right there. Mike Pence came right back, accused Clinton and Kaine of being the ones running an insult-driven campaign.
If Donald Trump had said all the things that you said he said in the way you said he said them, he still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables.
So what did you guys take away from this debate, Tiziana?
Well, first, I'd just like Tim Kaine to know that his mother and his wife will be just fine hearing that language. Thank you very much.
I have a feeling they saw that as well.
Yeah. I think they can handle it. You know, that was one of those debates where I feel like if you watched it versus you listened to it only, you would have a different sense of what happened. Because certainly the split screen and the robo-interrupting from Tim Kaine did not serve him well in terms of his appearance. But the fact-checking in the days after and the data around the number of times that Mike Pence said Trump didn't say something that he patently said and that we have on video to air that he did, in a lot of ways just characterizes that whole debate and comes back to Charlie's point that it just doesn't seem to matter with the base. I'm not sure that debate actually matters at all.
It doesn't. I mean, the only way a vice presidential debate ever matters is if you have one of these, I knew John Kennedy, I served with John Kennedy, you're no John Kennedy kind of moments. And I didn't think there was anything like that. I guess I had two basically takeaways from that debate. One was that Pence's talk show background really helped him, I think, just in terms of his demeanor in that part of it, which is obviously very important. I thought he came across well. The other thing is, it's what I think is one of the eternal lessons of life. Don't try to be someone that you're not. Hmm. And Kaine is an affable, agreeable, nice guy. And when goes out of his comfort zone and he tries to be an attack dog, it's not who he is, and it just doesn't go over well.
It's interesting. I thought that that debate helped a little bit. I mean, given how poorly Trump did in the first debate and then the terrible week or 10 days that he had after that debate, it seems like that his vice presidential picks performance at least sort of stopped that story from going on and on and on and on. Don't you think?
And my favorite moment about that was when Trump, who apparently, from what I read, was actually not happy with Pence because Pence didn't defend him enough. When he gets up and he's and it asked about Pence, well, Pence, you know, did really well, and of course that's a reflection on me because my first big decision was to pick him. You know, it's like Pence. This guy is pathological.
Well, and you know, here's a place that it may well matter. I'm not sure. In fact, I'll go all the way to Charlie. I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter with the general voting public, but it does seem like it matters within the Republican Party and potentially in some of the down-ticket races around the question of is there some sanity happening at the top? Is there a grown-up in that mix? And is there somebody carrying forward conservative principles that the rest of the Republican base can get behind?
Yeah.
From that perspective, it seems like it did provide a little bit of a stabilizing force. It's just that we have seen that if Trump decides to go off the rails again, he's going to control that story. There's nothing Mike Pence said in that one debate that's going to stop the train from going off those rails.
And it's not even a decision, by the way. I mean, this is a compulsion. This is a man who can't help himself.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think there are any lessons, though? Does Trump absorb anything from Pence's performance? I mean, does he sort of go, maybe if I just try a little bit of polished radio personality, so things will work out better?
To me, we always have suspected that just does not exist within Donald Trump. And to me, the stuff with the former Miss America or Miss Universe and the fact that he said that stuff, but B, after he said it, and it was obviously disastrous, he started digging the hole even deeper at 3 o'clock in the morning, was just to me the final proof that this is a man who cannot control himself.
And to maybe present just a little bit, I don't disagree with that, but to present a little bit different perspective, his approach is totally working for him. The guy doesn't, he may not have done radio talk show, but he did TV for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
And a year and a half ago, he was a reality show entertainer with some money in the back, right? And now he's the Republican candidate for president. And he's done that his way, and it has worked for him. So a couple of small dips in the polls would not be enough to convince him that he should go a different route. Because it's worked.
Well, let's move on to another variable in the presidential race, and this sort of has a closer connection to Massachusetts, and that's the Libertarian ticket. Former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson and former Governor Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, who was in Worcester last night. I was there. He was talking to a small crowd of about 50 people. And Weld spends a lot of time attacking Trump these days, which could help Clinton, but he claims he's committed to this Libertarian run. And I asked him about this last night after he blasted Trump on trade, on foreign policy, on whipping up anti-immigrant sentiment, which he called divisive and dangerous. Here's a bit of my exchange with him.
I don't think it's an overstatement to say that's the foundation of his political attack.
If you have such a strong case against Trump, then aren't you, in a sense, saying that the better thing to do would be to vote for Clinton?
No, what I'm saying is that Americans this year feel like they're watching a horror movie and they can't change the channel, or scary movie at least. And the fact is they can change the channel, and the path right up the middle is Johnson and Weld. We're two-term Republican governors in Democratic states. We cut the budget, and we're fiscally responsible, and at the same time, we're socially inclusive. We're the opposite of the Republican Party and Trump.
So there's Bill Weld last night in Worcester. Charlie, what do you make of his position in this race?
I think it's simply this. You know, Bill Weld is 71 years old, does not need to be concerned about his political future. For the Johnson-Weld ticket, the whole game was that they had to be included in the presidential debates. They didn't make it. And so now I think that, you know, he's got nothing to lose and he's going to do what he thinks is important, which is do whatever he can do to make sure that Trump is not elected.
But, but the thing is, he sort of denied that that is his main purpose. I mean, last night he was back sort of doubling down on this idea that I'm committed to the Libertarian ticket. What do you think, Tiziana?
No, he's not.
Sorry, Governor.
I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't have blurted that quite so openly.
This is why we bring you in.
Correct.
We like opinions.
No, he's not. Yeah. No, he's not. And, you know, it's an interesting rock and hard place for him because we've generated a lot of heat in this room alone about our frustrations with Donald Trump as a candidate, but Gary Johnson has not particularly showed a shortage of contempt for the office himself in terms of an understanding of what its qualifications are, the kinds of knowledge you ought to have, the ability to think on your feet, et cetera. So, and if that guy is the guy running the Libertarian ticket, then, and you're Bill Weld, and as Charlie says, you care about your country, you don't need a political future, and something's about to come, then you do what you got to do to make sure we don't have a train wreck.
Yeah. But it's funny again because I mean he's got this opportunity to sort of do that and just say well we didn't get our 15%, you know, best of luck to Gary, but you know we've got a bigger fish to fry here. But he's not doing that now. He's sort of backed away from what he suggested to the Boston Globe, that he really was kind of pivoting and making defeating Trump and even saying nice things about Hillary Clinton, which he wasn't doing so much last night. So I'm sort of puzzled.
Well, he's doing it without doing it. I mean, look, yeah. he's set up, you know, he's made it clear, I think, what he's really thinking. You know, he's known Hillary Clinton for over 40 years since they were on the Watergate committee.
That's
as young
right.
lawyers together. You know, it's not too hard, I don't think, to piece this one together.
Right. All right. Well, one more question about this Libertarian ticket. So they're polling an average of about 7% across the country. There are a few states that they're doing much better. In New Hampshire, they're running about 13%. If you add in Jill Stein, they're up. The third party alternative is up to about 17% in New Hampshire. Could this be a reprise of the 2000 race where the Ralph Nader vote, the third party vote, could really have an effect on the outcome of this? What do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think so, especially if you look, you know, sort of the narrowness of the margins in the polls. Most of them don't escape the margin of error in the first place. And pretty consistently, basically, we've been looking at a 3-point differential over the last several months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since so much of this election, it seems, is really going to hinge on either people who really aren't decided or people who are going to decide at the last minute to show up and pull the lever one way or another, anybody who can be a spoiler introduces a legit wild card into the mix. And I don't see any reason not to see this as a legit wild card in this mix.
What do you think?
I disagree on that one because a couple of reasons. I think, one, this is my opinion. We'll see if it's right. I don't think it's going to be as close when it comes to November 8th. I think that there will be a little bit more of a gap. I also think that history tells us that as we get closer to November 8th, the percentage that want to vote for the third party will go down. And the other thing is, I just think that Hillary Clinton has an amazing get-out-the-vote operation, and Donald Trump has zero get-out-the-vote operation,
yes,
far as I can tell.
And I find that interesting, but let me tell you where my fears take me, that really we are in our Brexit moment,
mm-hmm.
and that the traditional
yeah,
get-out-the-vote
yeah.
isn't the thing that's going
right,
to work here.
Right.
That there's a group of people who don't usually vote and aren't being captured in the polls who are, unless it's really bad weather that day, going to decide to show up and pull some levers that don't usually get pulled. And that we might actually be dramatically underestimating the potential for that
mm-hmm.
gap to be in the other direction
right.
once Election Day comes. And you know, all kinds of crazy things could happen
well, you know,
between now
that's
and
right.
then.
You know, it's a good point. It wouldn't be the first time that a candidate, you know, ran the last election, right? You know, so maybe that's true. Maybe we've seen a real difference.
All right. Well, let's leave presidential politics aside for a moment, because I want to turn to one Massachusetts-based story, and that is about Gloucester, the ousted Gloucester police chief, Leonard Campanello. Campanello gained national prominence for a program to help drug addicts get treatment instead of jail time, but he was accused of destroying evidence related to an investigation into allegations against him from two women. So on Monday, the mayor of Gloucester, Sefadia Romeo-Thakin, fired him and explained her position this way.
During the Labor Day weekend, my office received communications from a woman who made disturbing allegations regarding Chief Campanello's behavior during their relationship. She expressed concerns for her safety.
But yesterday we learned that Campanello's lawyer worked out a deal with the city to reverse his firing and instead to allow him to retire in January. Until then, he'll remain on paid leave. Here's Chief Campanello.
Not only is my retirement in the best interest of myself and my family, but it will ensure that the city of Gloucester may move forward in a manner that the administration believes is best for the community.
So this story leaves me really unsettled because, I mean, there are allegations. We don't know what happened. But, I mean, allegations of destroying evidence during an investigation, allegations from two women of physical harm. But now this deal allows him to retire with no other court actions. What do you two make of this, Tiziana?
Well, so a couple of things. One, the way I read it, and, of course, I don't see the paperwork behind the deal or anything,
yeah.
but the way I read it, no more court actions from the city, but the district attorney is still able to investigate this,
mm-hmm.
and if there's something criminal going on, that's separate.
Right.
So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, part of the dissonance, I think, in this particular situation is there's actually a difference between things he did as an employee of that city
right.
and things yeah. he did to private individuals in his private life. And this is about what he did as an employee of that city, as somebody whose job it is to enforce the law, and he then destroyed evidence. Mm-hmm. But the yuckiness of the potential of what he did in his private life
right.
is clouding our ability, I think, to some extent, to evaluate this from the perspective of this was an employee with an employment contract who stepped out of line and then who negotiated an outcome to that. And like it or not, that happens all the time.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and I also think that, look, what it comes down to, I think, on some level, is the fact that it became clear, I'm sure, to the city that if they wanted to just fire him and go down that road, that it was going to cost a lot of time and a lot of money, and there was going to be a lot of pushback legally from the chief, and certainly from Campanella's point of view, the big thing here, and this, I'm biased here because I've spent way too much time thinking and writing about this, is the whole pension situation. Mm-hmm. He's a police chief. That means he's in group three, which means he gets a very rich pension. Or I'm sorry, group four. It means he gets a very rich pension. And the thing that he wanted to be able to do more than anything is just to be able to retire, because given his years of service and being in group four and all that and what he was making, that he's going to get a pretty nice pension. And all he right. wanted to preserve that.
Well, I want to leave time for our hubbubs, those stories that didn't make it above the fold but caught our attention. Tiziana, I'll start with you. What's your hubbub?
Well, you know, normally you can rely on me to do like football or Ninja Warrior or something like that.
That's why we bring you in, Tiziana.
I want to go in a little bit different direction this time. I'm going to go to Harvard and Larry Wilmore. So Harvard announced this week that they're inviting black comedian and writer Larry Wilmore in next month to give a prestigious talk on media and journalism. And I'm really glad to see it, because Larry Wilmore took over the cleanup spot from Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central after The Daily Show, with a show that should have been called The Minority Report, mm-hmm. but was softened to be called The Nightly Show. And Stewart had wanted it to be The Minority Report, and so had Wilmore.
Much better. Yeah.
He then went on to try to do some of the most creative stuff on race, and the most smart and thoughtful and funny stuff on race. And I don't know who didn't have an appetite for it, but somebody didn't. Mm. And it was a real loss for that to be cut off just as the general election was heating up this summer. So I'm tickled for our region, at least, that voice is coming here right around time for the election to provide an alternative perspective.
All right. That's great. Charlie, your hubbub.
Well, mine begins with a riddle that combines popular cultural references from two generations. Okay. What do the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 phone and Spinal Tap drummers have in common?
All right, I give up.
It appears that both tend to spontaneously combine. last month, as if you have been reading the paper, Samsung announced that the phones could explode sometimes while charging and recalled them. This guy, Brian Green, was among those who was a part of the recall, got a new phone. So he got on a plane to go from Louisville to Baltimore, and he powers down the phone, puts it in his pocket, and notices that it's beginning to smoke.
Ouch!
And so dropped it on the floor, where it proceeded to burn through the carpet, scorched the subfloor of the plane, which was then evacuated before they ever left the gate. So I think when even the replacement phone is starting to catch fire, I would think that it's safe to say that things are a little tense these days at Samsung.
All right. Well, here's my debate. It's the big night we have on Sunday. No, not the Red Sox, not the Patriots, not Tom Brady returning, but the most important new episode of The Simpsons will be set in Boston. We are told it will take a few shots at the Patriots and our beloved city. So here's a brief clip about road rage in Boston, showing Homer Simpson sitting in traffic in the O'Neill Tunnel.
Delicious, delicious rage.
Sunday on Fox.
Move your garbage car!
Okay.
Why didn't I think of that one?
I've got to give credit to my wonderful director, Jamie Bologna. Charlie Chippio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and a research fellow at the Ash Center of Harvard Kennedy School, and Tiziana Deering, professor at Boston College's School of Social Work. Thank you both. Have great weekends.
You too.
It was fun.
Thanks.
And listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.